This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A silent storm begins to brew in an ancient land of darkness. With tumultuous force from the crust of the earth, two worlds come together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9. Wominjeka, Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities.
Yes, you're in Urban Dreaming. Hello, hello. This is Rami on the mic. And who's back?
Maddie. Maddie's back on the mic. Hello, hello.
Hello, Maddie. I haven't heard from you for ages. How you been?
I've been really good, mate. I've also been just sitting in the studio here listening to Worldwide Wave, and what an incredible program to come in after. I've missed it.
I also, when I say I haven't heard from you in ages, actually, I've been hearing a lot of your voice but not seeing you. Because you've been doing the breakfast show as well, I see.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I was rocking out Thursday morning breakfasts for over summer.
But early starts.
Yes, yeah, I'm back now. I'm back. Excited to be on the program tonight, especially because of all of the incredible guests we've got. Got some really great content to chat about.
Yes, great show indeed, actually, because we have two amazing artists who'll be in the studio with us tonight. That's Laniuk and Dakota. So they're both, one's a spoken word artist and the other is a spoken word artist as well as a hip-hop artist. And they'll be playing some of their tracks and as well as speaking some of their poems to us.
Ah, Too Deadly. That's exciting,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Can't wait for that. Also, we've got a yarn with a lady who's actually, her name is Sigrid, and she'll be yarning about the actual episode from last week's show in regards to the segment in The Sunrise when they spoke about the adoption of Aboriginal children into white families.
What a hullabaloo that was, and hasn't it blown up?
It's blown out of proportion to the extremes, and I think it's important that a lot of mob are doing that because it's about acknowledging countrymen and making sure we go through the right protocols and making sure there's representation. So we'll get Sigrid to have a yarn about that with us, which will be awesome, and then we'll get the guys to have a little bit of reflection because they've got a poem that they want to show us directly after that as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then we'll have, after that, we'll obviously a couple of good songs, our favourite tunes there, and we'll have a chat with one of the directors for this new show that we're in.
All right. This show, this hour, is going to be massive here on Urban Dreaming on Joy.
So stay tuned, guys. We've got a great song for you right now. This is Electric Fields with Shade Away.
Have you seen the light? Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
All right, guys, so that was Electric Fields, and that song was Shade Away. And now for those who are big Electric Field fans, we actually know that they're coming to Melbourne very soon on the 18th of April, and they'll be here basically doing their full haunch show before they head off overseas.
Oh, I'm so excited. I've missed them every single time.
It's awesome.
I'm their biggest fangirl.
Yeah, so, man, when I introduced Maddie to these guys, what was it, back in
April last year.
There you go. It's been a full year now. Since then, I've known that's all you play, isn't it?
It is actually what I play on repeat. Yeah.
Love it. So, just so you know, last week we were reflecting back on the story of Prue McSqueen. I say McSqueen, McSqueeny. And she actually had a conversation on the panel of the Sunrise segment in regards to the Aboriginal adoptions to white families. Now, we're going to play a quick segment here and just get back to you after that.
Another generation of young Indigenous children being abused in this way, and this conspiracy of silence and this fabricated PC outlook that, you know, it's better to leave them in this dangerous environment. I mean, it's just crazy to even contemplate that people could be arguing against this.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a responsibility.
So, yes, in regards to the conversation there, we had a yarn about how things should have been done a little bit differently in regards to protocol. That's something that I personally felt very, very hurt by, because there was no representation whatsoever for the Indigenous communities, particularly in regards to what they said when Prue McSqueen says, oh, it's okay, you know, maybe they need this because it's something they need to do for communities because it's been going on for too long, basically. And it's like, well, hang on a sec. There was one in three incidents, not even that, sorry, three incidents in the whole community that actually happened. And that caused the closure of communities. And that's the sort of thing that's what's happened to our mob, and things have been misconstrued for too long. And I wanted to just clarify, I'm not taking any sides because it's not right for me to judge, in a sense, because I know our people aren't judging in regards to what's happening, but we are feeling the hurt and the pain. And now it's got to that point where our people are, I guess it's, you know, we're hurting and we don't need this to continue. It feels like there's this alive, how would you say it? It's a live stolen generation in front of us as we speak. We don't want that to happen ever again. And in regards to this conversation, we've got two artists in the studio right now. So I'll introduce Laniuk. And Laniuk is actually from a French mother and an Aboriginal father. And her mob are the Larrakia and the, let me get this right, Kungarakan,
yeah.
Yes, and the Gurindji father. And her poetry in a short memoir often reflects the intersectionality of her cross-cultural and queer identity. Now, she was fortunate enough to contribute to the book of Colouring the Rainbow, which we'll discuss further soon, the Black Queer and Trans Perspectives, as well as winning the Indigenous Residency for Canberra's Noted Writers Festival in 2017 and Overland's Writers Residency for 2018. Laniuk currently lives in Melbourne, but is hoping to one day return to a hometown in Darwin.
Darwin.
So, Laniuk, now you've heard the segment before.
Yes.
Tell me your views on what's happened and, let me know what's happening.
Oh, we don't have long enough to hear my views on this story. Look, what we really saw in that conversation on national TV, you know, is erasure. It's the erasure of Indigenous voice. It's erasure of, you know, Indigenous presence. And that's a huge part of the colonial structure that we're living under. And, I think it's definitely the step towards decolonizing, and the practice of decolonizing is combating that erasure, you know, and we're seeing that, you know, we've seen that in the protests, and, you know, Sunrise has now gone and, you know, brought on an all-Indigenous panel to discuss the complexity of it. But I mean, regardless of whether Sunrise apologizes or not, regardless of, you know, where Sunrise goes from here on in, the fact that that even happened in the first place is the issue. And that doesn't just happen on Sunrise or national TV. That happens every single day that, you know, Aboriginal people are affected by. Every single time we walk down the street, every picture that's posted about us, you know, our views and our opinions, you know, are being erased from this discussion. Where's our representation? We don't even get an opportunity to defend ourselves.
Absolutely. Now, we also, I don't know if you could hear some muffled mms in the studio, but we're not just joined by Laniuk. We're also joined by Dakota. Now, There is a lot on this bio for Dakota that I can't actually pronounce, so I'm going to read the bits of his bio that I can pronounce so that you can get an idea as to who he is, and then we can go from there. So where do we even start with this? So Infinite Dakota commits to the limitless potential expressing unity within nature. As creator spirits, descendants in the present, Dakota Alcantara Camacho follows their echo by crafting wholeness from fragments. Dakota and their twin Aussie crack through their eggs upon the lands of the...
Snohomish.
Snohomish. Oh, there you go. You can... Would you like to keep reading this?
You go on, I'll fill in.
Okay. And were cared for by a community of clams migrating like salmon from the rivers and mountains of Oceania to...
Shwedab and Swinomish.
Territory. I love this. It's filling in the bits I can't do. Alcantara Camacho tends relationships to the indigenous mind through somatosonic life ways as a student of
Grupo Capoeira Angola Palmares, Calpulli Tlalotecutli.
And hip-hop. Dakota graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison as a first-wave hip-hop scholar with a degree in gender and women's studies and Tisch School of Arts at NYU with a master's in performance studies. Dakota has also been the primary composer, graphic and web designer, video editor and technician for iMoving Lab, an international, indigenous, intercultural and interdisciplinary arts collective. Last year, Dakota released their first full-length album...
Nat Lotla!
Meaning, Give Life, a sonic artistic mission statement to give life to the vibration of the natural world.
So there's nothing he hasn't done.
No, no. Welcome.
And just to top it off, so Dakota, is actually also working on the Commonwealth Games coming up. And oh, wow. I met Dakota back in the Irumboy Festival.
Okay.
So I was blown away by some of his work that I've seen at APAM. And let us know more. What's your views on this whole topic?
Oh, well, thanks very much. That was real fun to play off that
yeah, a lot of
introduction.
Fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what the Sunrise segment demonstrates is a type of ignorance that... that is actually necessary in order for the kind of Australian identity to constitute itself. There's actually a Aboriginal scholar whose name is Brian Martin who lives here in Birrarunga or Nam or what the dominating culture calls Melbourne, who writes about how in the European imagination had to disconnect itself from nature in order to make sense of itself. And then that disconnection actually means that people are, you know, disconnecting themselves from the realities that are happening, you know, with Aboriginal peoples. And what we see, you know, across the world and from, you know, because I'm not from this country, but I've spent time in Indigenous communities in different places. And there seems to be a real misunderstanding of what the impact of colonizing has had on our communities. And what the ongoing, like, structural colonizing is doing to us. And one of the ways that it's trying to do that to us is to convince us that, you know, that we're not good enough, that we don't know how to take care of ourselves, you know, that we don't know how to take care of our communities and our young people. And these are all lies that have been kind of the foundation of colonizing since the beginning, you know, and it's, to see that the ideology perpetuated, but not only perpetuated, but given a platform in a, you know, on national television is honestly disgraceful. And it's disgraceful because we're living in a moment in time where we really need to demonstrate our respect for each other and our mutual understanding for each other. And it's just not happening for Indigenous peoples because dominating culture just hasn't been listening to Indigenous voices. You know, and if they were, you know, some of the complexities that Suri, you were talking about last week, you know, around you know, I was listening to the woman that was interviewing, talking about like the different kind of structures of family networks and the different ways that people take care of each other, which I'm really familiar with, which is that, you know, if your mom and dad are gone, you know, maybe your auntie looks after you, or maybe your auntie's auntie or your cousin's cousin or your older sister, older brother. And I was raised also, you know, partially by my older sister. So that type of thing is real natural to me. But when you have another worldview come in, and that worldview is the one that is given the power to make the decisions at a legal level, right? And we're talking about child protective services, etc., and they don't have a clear understanding about what's really happening in the communities, you know, then that creates an issue. And then the other issue is that, you know, we're the Indigenous peoples on the planet right now, we're collectively surviving genocide, you know, and it's not a genocide that happened, it's a genocide that's ongoing. It's a genocide that is, you know, means that we're inside of a concrete building, inside of concrete paved streets in this place that the dominating culture is calling Melbourne, when it's really the land of the Kulin Nation. And
and what impact, you know, has that had on the Kulin Nation's language, on their ability to fish from the rivers? You know, the first thing that I did when I landed here is I went and I greeted the Yarra, and it's just so loud down there. You know, it's so loud. And I was just thinking about the fishing traps that used to be down there, and how people aren't able to engage with the traditional practices, and how that is actually disrupting people's ability to create health and well-being, you know? And so when you talk about, like, what's happening in Aboriginal communities, when you're talking about what's happening in Aboriginal families, like, let's talk about how colonizing is, like, structurally creating barriers to us living in the ways that we're meant to be living. And that's not just us as Indigenous peoples, that's us as everybody that has ancestral and traditional life ways that connect them to the earth and to holistic ways of life.
Yes, so we're actually in the studio with Laniuk and Dakora, and they're both hip-hop artists and spoken word poets. And I met Laniuk back at the Black...
Black Dot Gallery.
And there was a poem that you read, and it really touched so many nerves on me, but also the truth in regards to what's happened to our mobs. Mm. But also beautifully expressed the way you said it in a way that was also educational. And I'd love you to read that right now, just to give us a taste of some of your work as well.
Certainly. Finger on the map. This is mine now. Flag on the hill, it's the Union Jack invading the red, the yellow and the black. Mm. That attempt on genocide never did subside. They're busy filling the minds of black and white with lies. Let's recognize. Fuck that shit. Let's decolonize. Let's reprogram our minds and realize that we're all still slaves. Slaves to a system that took the children away, raped the women as their men lay in pools of blood. Hold up. Slaves to a system that takes our children away, rapes our women as our men sway by ropes. Powerful people, but we weren't ready. Ready for a king that lacked integrity. Ready for sickness and guns and big cities. Ready to battle a man that didn't fight hand to hand, but with poison and bullets and prisons. Fuck this system. Imperialism came by boat, then infiltrated our minds. Arrived with the Bible, a forked tongue and a bottle of wine. No need to kill us when they're keeping us institutionalized. Now they're turning our suffering into dollar signs. Turning our forest and desert into uranium mines. Meanwhile, we're placing our elders into early graves, leaning in to kiss the soft grays of their heads, then turning around and burying our cousins next. Tonight we stand on the unrelinquished land of the Wurundjeri, knowing always that their sovereignty was never ceded.
Mm. Oh. Yeah, when we hear that sort of stuff, it's hard because there is truth in what you say. You know, this country was taken without permission. And there was a thing of claiming land that was unoccupied, but it was.
And it was never relinquished, you know? That claim was never given up. It still is the land of the Kulin Nations. That's still there, you know? And I think that we really sort of have to come to terms with that. It's not just about saying, oh, yes, you know, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners. No, no, no. I'd like to acknowledge the true owners of this land who are continuing to live under colonization. You know, there's a change in our, you know, national mentality that really has to happen.
And this is an interesting conversation in regards to what you're saying too, because I find, you know, being a modern Aboriginal person, okay, when we look at today's world, in regards to how we... You know, we're obviously holding on to a lot of intergenerational trauma that's continued to today. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these things are happening. And meanwhile, there's a lot of our mob who are, and I can speak on behalf of myself even, there's times when I find to band-aid myself with ways of getting away to stop thinking about stuff that we go through.
Of course.
But then you've got to think about how we speak too, because I find that particularly with this show, because we try to show the idea of two worlds that coexist but never necessarily always come together as one to understanding. So how do we find ways to for our peoples to not only to be acknowledged but also to show that point of, okay, let's try work together. How do we go about this? And also in regards to what you said, the owners of the land, yes? Mm. But also I try to think today in the sense that we don't own the land. The land owns us. Mm-hmm. So we are really custodians of the land. And we're looking ways to make sure it's sustainable.
Well, yes. I mean, coexisting, is it coexistence? I don't really feel like I'm existing. I don't really feel like I'm thriving. You know, I'm going home and, you know, I'm seeing my country and my culture being developed. I'm seeing, you know, when we talk about, you know, the stolen generation and we talk about another stolen generation, I don't think it's just happening in terms of child removal. Mm-hmm. I think that we're losing access to our culture mm-hmm. and access to our land. You know, there's barbed wire fences between me and my country. You know, I'm being told about stories when moving around Darwin City and there's a Woolworths being built up. It's becoming inaccessible. I don't know if that's coexistence. And I always think, if I were to hurt you, if I was to do something wrong by you, how do you heal? How do you find closure in that? There has to be a discussion between you and I where I acknowledge that I hurt you. I acknowledge that I did something wrong. And then you can find a way to move beyond that. There is no acknowledgement happening here. We're in national denial about what actually happened. There are people who believe that the stolen generation was a good thing. There are people who believe that Aboriginal people weren't here. I've had that said to me. Oh, there weren't any Aboriginal people here when Whitefellas arrived. And it's like, there is a denialism happening here. How am I supposed to heal? How am I supposed to come to terms with today's reality when you won't even accept yesterday's reality? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I really love what you're saying. And I've been listening to a sister of mine, a spiritual sister of mine. Her name's Lila June, and she's Diné, which is what the dominating culture also calls the Navajo Nation. And she was talking about healing and how she was saying that when somebody wrongs me, I'm responsible for my healing, you know? But then that person is also responsible for their healing and their integrity, because if they hurt me, that means that they're hurting, you know? And so I think when, you know, when you're asking about how do we come together, well, there's a lot of listening that, you know, people that are benefiting from the dominating culture are going to need to do. You know, people are going to have to really start listening to these words that our sister is saying, you know, and these aren't just your words, you know, they're the words of your ancestors, you know, they're the words of your community. And across the world, I think there's kind of more and more ears that are turning themselves towards the indigenous voices. But if we look at the history of the last 500 years, the people, even a little bit further, the people that are connected to the earth that are the ones that can listen to what the waters are saying, listen to what the trees are saying. You know, those voices have been silenced, marginalized, and violently killed, you know. And something that Lila's taught me a lot about, too, is expanding our definition of indigenous. So if we look at the history that happened in Europe with the burning and dismembering and maiming and raping of women, you know, those women were people that were connected to their earthways, to their lifeways that connected them to the natural world. And I think that that's one of the things about the indigenous voice coming forward right now, you know, in this age of mining and technology and the development of our sister's land in Darwin and also in my territory, too. You know, I think, how do we listen to the earth? You know, if we want to talk about coexistence and coming together, like, let's come together with the earth, because that's where our life comes from.
So that's on the conversation with Laniuk and Dakota. We'll be right back with you guys. We're on Urban Dreaming, and you're on Urban Dreaming. And we'll be right back with another conversation with the lady who's going to give us a bit more insight into what's happening at the moment.
In the beginning.
Two Worlds Collide by Katajala Kiridana, or Sandhill Women as they're known. You're on Urban Dreaming here on Joy. I'm Maddie.
And Sarami. Just got me on the spot there.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, mate.
All good. So we're about to have a conversation with a lady named Sigrid Herring. She's actually a Gomeroi woman. She's a proud mother of two great children and a passionate community member. Who lives and works and raised by the family of Darug Country in Sydney. For 30 years, she's worked with the families in family support and community development. And for the last 20 years, she's been community-based settling in and 10 years training for the Aboriginal workers for their health. And just recently back to the NGO, which is also the community legal sector and community in engagement. Are you on the line there, Sigrid?
Yeah, hello everyone, hi.
Thank you so much for offering your time for us.
Thanks.
So it was really interesting to, just in regards to this segment that was mentioned on Sunrise about the Aboriginal children being adopted to white families, and it's caused a bit of stir in the communities as well as national news, and we'd love to hear your point of view and what's actually happening as we speak in regards to this situation.
Yeah, it's a terrible shock as an Aboriginal person, an Aboriginal mother, and imagine if you were an Aboriginal child listening to Sunrise and listening to people that you should be able to trust and look up to talk about having children adopted to non-Aboriginal families because they might be raped or neglected or abused. Like, strong language for families and unfair language for Aboriginal families to be listening to in their lounge rooms. That, you know, that's the kind of shock that, and abhorrence that people feel about that. And in terms of, you know, how we look at that in Australia, we are 200 years down the track of trying to find some sort of fairness in, you know, 200 years ago, losing country, you know, being regarded as nothing, called terra nullius, and then being, you know, like having, you know, more than 100 years of murder and massacre to deal with, then locked up and excluded in missions and reserves. Then we have the stolen generation. And so we have, you know, 10 or 9 generations of children, Aboriginal children, socialised in that kind of dehumanising horror. You would call it terrorism. And then in the last few years, since like 1975, when we had the Racial Discrimination Act come in, we've had a little bit more fairness and a little bit of, you know, looking at what we could do for Aboriginal people and children. But only tiny 1.5 generations of people have been in that time, and still we've got this undercurrent in Australia of just racist rhetoric.
So in regards to the stolen generation, now the conversation was saying from Prue McSweeney's point of view that it's the best thing for the children. It's about the children. She kept expressing this. And the point is, if it's about the children, then why are the children being put into non-Indigenous communities where they don't learn their culture and they don't learn anything about their spirituality in regards to ceremony and in regards to connection to culture and communities?
But we continually fail to resource Aboriginal families to be able to survive that trauma, heal from that trauma and look after their own children. But we fail to do that. As a wider, broader community of people, we don't do that. We just keep throwing money at programs, funding them for a year and a half, taking the money away. It's an endless complexity of why those kinds of things don't make any difference for people. You know, if we were to ask Australians about their common beliefs of Aboriginal people, we'd have the same list of things on the board in, you know, 1900 as we do now in 2018. People maintain those belief systems that they have underneath about Aboriginal people, and we don't do anything about resourcing people properly.
Yeah, so
we don't do anything about that trauma.
Last week, we spoke in regards to the concept of when Aboriginal people were first taken away. And what happened was there was obviously a different cultural way of what they believe what was the right way and what was wrong for our people, but not seeing exactly how the living ways of Aboriginal people were to begin with. And their way was to say, basically, in a nutshell, the kids are running around, they've got, you know, there's nowhere for them in regards to they're not being looked after. We need to make sure these kids are looked after and taken in as well as being educated. But there was a conversation we had with one of the ladies on the phone as well, Jessica Lindsay, and she referred to it as a misunderstanding due to the fact that young children were running freely but also being watched over by their elders. And this was, you know, obviously, I guess, misconstrued again through what they believe what was the right way and the wrong way. But now that we know how, I guess, today's modern world works, and how we're supposedly getting to the point of this is the way it is standardly now. What is your views in regards to how, I guess, how do you find things to be today in contrast to what it was back then?
When we're training, we often say something like, if I'm running a group of parents, Aboriginal people, I might say, if you're Aboriginal, you have to know you come from very good things. And for a lot of Aboriginal people, they've lost sight 10 generations ago of what life might have been like back in the day, you know, back before invasion. And one thing to know about that is if we had a just world where we put, you know, that European society of the time and Aboriginal society together, we would have chosen Aboriginal child-rearing ways because they were really superior to the ones that, you know, of the people that came here in 1788. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, Aboriginal kids were born into the heart of their communities. There are dreaming stories all over the place that talk about how whole groups of adults will be punished if harm came to a child at all. The telling thing in it is in journals of early Australian, like European settlers, they talked about Aboriginal people love their children too much. And the other telling thing is that when Australians got here, there weren't any children in Aboriginal Australia down no coal mines. They weren't working their little fingers to the bone in factories, and they weren't being transported across the sea for stealing food. They weren't orphaned. Within weeks of that invasion, that settlement, there were orphaned European children, and they were called currency kids, and they were being looked after by Aboriginal people around Sydney. So the aspirations that we have for children in childhood and their innocence and the right to be safe and to grow and be nurtured by everyone in your community, be attached and connected, we already had that going on in 1788. And the group of people that came here did not. Those aspirations are new to European society. They were people who did not care for their children properly.
Yeah, it seemed that, when in their mighty wisdom when they came over, their perception became our reality. And 228-ish years later, we've had a lot of knockbacks and a few tiny steps forward and then obviously been thrown back, you know, quite a few generations by what our friends at Sunrise did last week. What do you think that that Australia as a nation need to do to move forward in reconciliation or move forward in a way to ensure this doesn't happen again? I know it's a silly question because we have the answers, but, you know, sometimes it needs to either be spelled out or, you know, maybe there's a new option out there. What would you like to see happening?
I'd like to see a true acknowledgement of the losses and the terrors that Aboriginal families and parents have had to survive in over those 10 generations. And I'd like to see Australians be grateful and thankful for the land that they've stolen, that they live on, that they live good lives on. You know, like, we're a thriving society these days, and yet the people who have sovereignty on that land are still at the bottom of our social pile. Well, that is untenable in terms of, like, we need to write that stuff, and we need to find that recognition and that acknowledgement, and we need to start treating Aboriginal people like returned soldiers. You know, with not just closing the gap medical, but gold medical cards, where people can be resourced and have the resources that they need to keep their children at home. You know, no one's ever going to say, don't protect the child. I'm never going to say that. No Aboriginal parent is ever going to say, we don't want to see our children safe and happy and healthy. But we would like to see our own communities resourced to the point where we can care for those children ourselves.
So, Sigrid, just
and
in the studio...
that means...
Oops, sorry, I was just saying, in the studio, it seems to be like... There's, you know, obviously what's going on nationally on television, as well as what's going on in conversations after, and what's been happening due to the protests at the front of Martin Place. We've got a couple of artists in the studio who've also been reflecting on what you've been saying, and I'd love to just give the mic for a moment to Dakota to show his poem.
Thank you.
And have a listen to what he's got to offer.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sigrid. This was some really powerful words that you were sharing, and just want to share these words, which came from the ancestors, and I think speak to what you're talking about, and are hopefully a gift to the people of this land. It's really what you're saying is really important about the way that we give recognition to what has happened, and we find a way to heal, and we actually resource that healing. And I think that our poetry and our creativity is a really beautiful way that we can do that. So I offer these words with that prayer. Liberation is choosing self-respect in every breath and nothing less. Because we don't need ratchet friends named self-hate. Instead, we use our actions for compassion, moving in a love light through one mic, amplifying the frequencies of speaking the truth. Give thanks for our roots, because where would we be without them? Don't doubt them after all they've bursted through, working to give birth to you. What's worse than you denying the prayer that sent you flying out of the womb? Don't you dare make a tomb out of your breath. Accept that you are blessed and make a home out of your life. Don't chill on the front steps with self-consciousness the whole night. Come inside. Make yourself comfortable with yourself. You don't need a mirror to see any clearer. You've got a third eye that's receded into your brain because they say it's no longer safe to follow your heart. So we must look deeply inwards and learn to love the dark parts, because it's about time that we did. Because the earth is dark and you are made of her. Because the infinite darkness is what Ponthan traversed to find this place for you and for me to claim. And this is an ancient love. So take a risk and believe that love exists. Because love, you came from this. Because your ancestors had a vision and you are it. So switch on your inner light and let it guide you. Because you are the sun and the universe of possibilities revolve around your daily choices. And your choices, well, you have no other choice. Mother Earth is about to kill us unless we find the courage to heal us. So will you cower or assume your power? You are the fruit of God. Don't turn sour. But even if you did, my grandmother would still eat you with a little bit of doni, that's hot pepper.
Cause the old people in my family know gratitude in a concentration camp. No thankfulness after 400 years of foreign occupation. After 68 nuclear bombs have risen over the horizon of our disregarded humanity. We still know family. Because no missiles whistle louder than our creation songs. And it doesn't take a bomb to know this. And you would notice if you opened the heart and your ears. Fear of disconnection does not make it wrong to connect. You are native to breath. And yes, there is magic in the air. And you have a gift. And it would be unfair if you don't share. Don't be scared of yourself. Who does that help? Not you, and definitely not anyone else. This is your life, and you are 98.6 degrees of light. So shine bright like a diamond, like the sun in a lion's mane. You are the sixth sun rising, man. A new day is coming. There is no use in running. There is one choice. Loving. Because all life is sacred, and you are life, and you are sacred, and there is a spiritual evolution that is begging for your creation, and you are creator, and this poem is your reflection. It's a prayer for your power, asking you to step in.
So there you go. That was the Kotta with his beautiful, beautiful poem.
And amazing. Thank you. Yeah.
So it's, you know, this is why I find sometimes, you know, as much as we can speak and we can talk and we get angry, there are ways that we can talk to one another, and that's through the arts.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, I think, I guess, and the why I mention this is because there's a lot of angry people right now. There's a lot of lot of hurt people. And in regards to the Sydney Morning Herald, there was a conversation which happened on the Media Watch, and it shows the demonstrators who are holding placards and banging in the studio glass windows and chanting, "Leave the kids alone." And at this stage, what they're doing is they've actually just stopped completely. They've blocked out anything in regards to these protesters being seen or heard, and the chanting is not heard within the soundproof studios. And, you know, there's only so much that we can scream, I guess. So to finish off, Sigrid, how do you think we can find ways to get our message across but to not be angry?
I really think we can go straight to Aboriginal culture because even though what we're witnessing when we see people protest like that is trauma. We're witnessing people who have been traumatised and who are rageful and angry. But if we look back to our own cultural ways, we can see that all our lore is in our art, our dance, our song, our story, our narrative. And we've lived in this country for 65,000 years in harmony, up to 600 different cultural groups living together, trading, rearing happy, healthy families. I think that we just need to look back to what was the poem? Your ancestors had a vision. Ours did too. We just need to look to that again.
Well, anger is a natural response as a human condition. But I find that what's happening with anger is actually not being seen as something that people want to listen to. And protests are a part of that. You know, protests, I can be angry.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's got to that point. We also find that we need to find other ways that we can get a message across, I guess. And it's hard. It's hard, isn't it? But thank you for your time, Sigrid. We have to finish off there with you, unfortunately. But
Thank you for listening. That was great.
Thank you so much for your time. So that was Sigrid Herring, guys. And you're on Urban Dreaming. The time is 8:51. We're in studio with Dakota and Laniuk, spoken word poets and hip-hop artists, and Maddie.
Hey, this is Joe Williams, former NRL player, professional boxer, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. Stay deadly with Urban Dreaming.
Thank you, Joe Williams. What a deadly fella he is. So you're on Urban Dreaming, so stay tuned. We've got also a couple of more poems. And, yeah, Maddie's got something to tell you.
No, I do. Yes, well, we've got Dakota and Laniuk in the studio. And Laniuk has done some reflection about what we've been talking about, the sunrise, you know, taking the kids away from our families and communities into white homes. And Laniuk's written a poem about her feelings towards that. So take it away.
Clear black bodies off black land. Clear back voices off of air. No air time for these black mouths to breathe. No TV time for these black eyes to see. No contribution to this morning's national story. No presence in your history. You've been dictating what happens to our mob since your boats arrived. No mention of murder or genocide. Assimilation works to institutionalize, leaving our stories of violence, media erasing our voices of defiance, green screening the protest, fuck sunrise. So the country hears your lies and believes. Like that task force for the Sudanese, like a cop gonna know the difference between Sudan, Ethiopia and Mozambique, like leaving refugees drowning out at sea, but fast-tracking white South African visas, please. Like this government ain't racial profiling. We're living under white supremacy. Erasure is the tool of the colonial. Fool everybody into believing and misconstrued lie so we can't see what's going on inside. Clear black bodies off black land. Now the land, air and sea is for the white man as though all our loss wasn't enough. Don't talk about us without us.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Honey, that was incredible.
You just wrote that before.
I wrote that today, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, feeling a lot of emotions about all this conversation, obviously. Yeah,
of course,
goodness
of course.
Me. And like Sigrid was saying, it is, you know, it's going back to our roots, to our culture, to our country. And, you know, the way that we deal with things is through our dance and our language and our song and, you know, coming together in sovereignty there. And with what you've been talking about here, I went today to an awesome exhibit, which if you're listening, it falls in line with everything we've been talking about. It's called Colony Frontier Wars, and it's on at the NGV Australia at Fed Square. And it is the frontier wars from the perspective of white colonizers and also of the Indigenous people. And it just is the most incredible exhibit I think I've been to in a really long time. The beautiful thing is that the Indigenous part of the exhibit is free, so everyone should go and check that out. Just what we've been talking about oppression and the frontier wars and the stolen generation. And, you know, it is so prevalent now as it was back then, and the installation art and the paintings and the photographs and the energy in there is palpable, and everyone should go and see it.
Mm.
And it's relevant to what's happening today. You know,
absolutely.
It's not just in the past, it's actually happening right now as we speak. And for those, you know, it is pretty heavy topics that we're talking about as well, so just know that there is someone there for you in case you have no one at all. You can definitely get in touch with Lifeline Australia, and this is in crisis support or any mental help in discussion that you might need. So feel free to call that number, because they are there to help listen to you. And the number there is 131114. That's 131114. That's Lifeline Australia. I'd love to finish off with one more poem, if that's okay. If we can get Dakota to do one more, is that cool?
Yep, totally. Yeah. It's going to be a quick version of it, so we'll see what we can do. But so yeah, my ancestry is from a place that is called Gwahan, but the dominating map likes to call it Guam. So I came up with a little fun way to approach that, and we're going to get the track rolling for y'all in just 1 second. Yep. Can I get more of that track in the headphones? It's so cliche for a rapper to say. Oh yeah, there we go. Oh yeah, so it's like. I don't wanna be from Guam no more. I'm not from Guam, I'm from Guam. It's the place that they call Guam, as if I pronounced it wrong, no. I don't wanna be from Guam no more. I'm not from Guam, I'm from Guam. It's the place that they call Guam, but it's also where they drop in bombs. I woke up in Lenape Hokan, breathing in the breeze that my telly rally posted from a relative inspired by the elements that raised me. My mother's water broke on the sacred Salish Sea, where Papa found a plot to propagate a garden. My umbilical departed in my fontanelle, it hardened up my soul, where I learned to flow with J. Rain D and my Kia Ab Creole Latin Road. Now I'm sipping Sexy Beast at a cafe down the road, stretching from Tweet Club across the rainbow
bridge to home. Solemn view to prayer, sit and footing, guida, hoba, sit and umisa. I'm drinking loose leaf tea made of rooibos from the Khoisan mountaintop, where we party with the Zulus and clairvoyants, feeling buoyant as the clouds gather. Wind spoke in the howl, tattered by the ground's patterns. There was cliff lines of fresh wings, refreshing the homies who know me, Mini, Wachoni, across the globe, we connecting through investing and flowing. Prayers and ancient tongues, letting them heal what was done to us. Spirit runs through us with thunderous rhythms. Risen from soil, our skin is akin to. From Sweden, Ojibwe, Eora, and every country I've been to. Blood memory lived through every trauma it's been through. So watch this space, the sacred fire's flame is blue and purple, drawn circles of the old ones. Because they told us we've been chosen to send you. Uniting the bones and the muscles, the stone doesn't struggle, owns a role in the puzzle. Alone or in bundles, birthing twins when they crumble in the lodge. Sweat dripping from my eyebrows, I'm singing these songs. The spirit in you knows ritual is never lost. So hold a shard and carry on with your chance to the gods.
There you go. Woo! Nice. Nice work.
That was Dakota.
Unfortunately, we have to go, guys. This is it. Urban Dreaming. Thank you so much for your time, guys. And if you want to check them out, go onto Facebook under Laniuk and Dakota.
You have been listening to Urban Dreaming with your hosts, Sue Rummy and Miss Elanius. A show that aims to bridge the gap and close the divide. You can stay up to date by adding us on your Facebook and download the podcast from joy.org.au. Urban Dreaming on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.